You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello and welcome to episode 35 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
And I'm Paul.
And it's just us two this week due to unforeseen circumstances, but hopefully we will have the band back together next week.
Boom.
We were going to talk to you about some pieces of news prior to recording, and then certain events happened, and so we're not going to talk about that bit of news. So we have changed the outline slightly from what it was originally going to be on the fly. So if this seems even less rehearsed than usual, that's because we haven't had as much time as we'd like to think about it. But at the same time, we've got stuff to say. All right.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Drake.
Damn straight. Okay, first bit of news is it was announced today that there will be no more DLC for Skyrim. Well, certainly not of the sort of expansion type of variety that Dragonborn and Dawnguard have been, though Dragonborn's in a lot of opinion of others, a far more extensive campaign than Dawnguard. At the same time, basically it means that the Skyrim team are off working on other things. Paul is probably quite thankful for this, aren't you, Paul?
Well, I don't really mind what, you know, developers do that I don't particularly, you know, like the look of. But, you know, I recognise that Bethesda is a big name in the games industry. It's just that both Fallout and, like, the Elder Scrolls games have never really appealed to me.
They've also stolen vast amounts of your time with me, haven't they?
Yes.
I said that I knew there was an ulterior motive. I haven't actually had the chance to play either Dawnguard or Dragonborn yet, mostly because I've been holding out for a Game of the Year edition. The only DLC that I've willingly downloaded has been Hearthfire, and that's mostly because, in terms of how I tend to save up money in Skyrim, it works out as a cheaper way to get a house than trying to get one in a town.
I was just going to say, when it comes to RPGs, I kind of prefer mine console-based rather than... Because I know, you know, obviously Skyrim and whatnot is on 360, but it feels and it looks more like a PC game.
You say that, but then if you put all the... If you were playing on PC, you put the graphics up crazy high or something, or you had some of the mods that are available for making it look ultra-realistic, then... Quite frankly, the console game looks crazy poor.
But, no, I mean, it's not necessarily in, you know, the graphics quality. It's more in the style. You know, it's kind of first person. You kind of almost like centered with the, you know, kind of the thing in the center. Most console games that are designed for consoles don't have that kind of dead in the center kind of thing. Yeah. They have like third person perspective, or they have, you know, moving reticles and
but
whatnot.
But you can play all of the sort of Elder Scrolls games and the last two Fallout games in the third person if you so choose. It just so happens that it makes it really awkward to figure out whether or not you can pick something up, and similar such mechanical issues of trying to get around the game world.
There's all sorts of things. I mean, like the quest system, I think, is very much kind of from a PC style. And
you're just not too happy with open worlds, are you?
There's some open worlds which I can kind of, you know, like Borderlands. I mean, I know that wasn't completely open world, but I quite enjoyed it. But I don't think I can really...
It's the same with you in the GTA. Which GTA games have you
completed? Oh, the Grand Theft Auto games. The only problem with the Grand Theft Auto games is that it generally tends to be a case of the story begins to bore me for whatever reason, and I just decide to nick a car.
And, well, get chased by the police. And
yeah, that's part of the fun.
Yeah, yeah. I keep hearing that.
And then, like, eventually, like, the army comes and whatnot.
Okay. Do you know, there's one thing we haven't mentioned, though, with all of this, is the fact that it kind of makes me wonder what that development team are working on next. And it's like, is it another Elder Scrolls or is it Fallout 4? I could go either way of happiness on that level. I really could. I'm hoping it's a Fallout 4, to be honest, though.
To be honest, I can't see Bethesda doing a game that isn't quite like that. I mean, obviously they started out with stuff like Baldur's Gate. So
Baldur's Gate. Yeah.
Who the hell is Balador?
I don't know, but somebody should make a game about him having a gate now. I think that should totally be a thing. Yeah. If he doesn't already have a game about being a gate, having a gate, sitting on a gate, opening and closing a gate.
Wow, that sounds like an entertaining game.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I can't imagine them doing anything different in a way.
Well, they're not going to do anything different because, I mean, they're going to keep with that first-person perspective. I mean, the original Fallout games, like the first two ones, are this weird sort of, well, I say weird, sort of third-person perspective that's kind of like you're looking down. Yeah, isometric. Yeah, I don't know what that means in terms of games display.
Well, basically, isometric is more of kind of graphic design type thing, where instead of actually the lines going off into a vanishing point, they actually go parallel to each other.
All instead. I know is that you looked down on the surroundings and saw your avatar.
Okay.
I think, if I remember correctly.
Was it down from an angle or down like bird's eye view?
I think more of an angle.
Yeah.
But I would like a Fallout 4 because I was not satisfied at all with Fallout New Vegas. You can ask me why off of this podcast, but I've gone into these reasons many times over the last few years as to why I didn't like New Vegas. Fallout, I basically miss how Bethesda did things in Fallout 3 a lot, especially after completing New Vegas. So I kind of hope that it's another Fallout. I mean, I would be equally as overjoyed if it was the sixth the sixth Elder Scrolls game, outside of obviously the events of what's going to be happening with the Elder Scrolls Online, which is obviously still...
Is that still being done?
Yeah, I mean, there's been betas and stuff for it.
I think I heard rumours a while back of, like, a Fallout MMO or something.
Okay. So the trials and tribulations of the Fallout MMO, which were to do with... Oh, which developer... I'm trying to think. It's one of the old developers. Been around for a while. Is it Interplay? No. Whoever owned the Fallout IP originally, who created it and that...
I think it might be an Interplay, actually.
They tried to argue that they had the rights still, after selling a whole load of it to Bethesda and ZeniMax, to create a Fallout MMO if Bethesda and ZeniMax didn't create one within a certain time period. ZeniMax and Bethesda contested this. Interplay acted like they still had the rights to actually make the game. And I actually saw concept art and stuff. And they did do, like, for instance, people who signed up for it, they did do, like, an e-newsletter every so many months, which was sort of, like, showing things like the weapon system and the sort of classes and enemies that were going to be coming out in the MMO. And then, like, the final legal blow was laid down square on the whole thing and development ceased. Yeah. So there was a game in development. I'm not sure if they got past pre-production stages of planning in terms of design and stuff or whether or not a degree of coding took place. But yeah, it's dead.
That kind of sounded like the legal kind of whatnot. Kind of sounded like they handed over the right or sold the rights to Bethesda and was like, you know what? We're going to reap the benefits of this because they're not going to do anything for a while and it's going to come back to us and we get to keep the money. Well, that's what it sounds like to me anyway.
To me, the situation was a little bit more similar to the whole sort of time elapse situation with Watchmen, Alan Moore and DC and the whole fact that they basically keep doing things with it so that the rights can't revert back. but then at the same time, like, it was, in the case of Interplay and Bethesda and ZeniMax, it was a issue of understanding of who still had the rights, and Interplay were all like, oh no, we retain the rights for this one little tiny thing. And yeah, I'm not sure as to whether or not it was properly settled in court or the settlement finally happened out of court and whether or not any financial compensation took place as a result of all this legalityness.
Legalityness.
Yeah, that's the new word. It's gonna stay. It's gonna stick.
That's gonna stay.
That's gonna stick.
I think that's gonna fall. That's not gonna stick.
Sounds better than the resurgence of the use of the word criminality since the London riots.
Criminality.
It isn't actually.
That sounds like it's like a Mortal Kombat move.
It does. Criminality. It does. It's a word of which its use has annoyed me since the London riots of, no, was it 2011 those happened?
Yeah.
And it was like just criminality this, criminality that. And for a while I was wondering, is this actually a word or is this one the media's made up? Because until the riots, I had never heard of the word.
Can I just say that I've got this image in my head now of Scorpion like harpooning a bag of Tesco Valley of rice and like pulling it towards him, seeing it split everywhere and they go, "Aah!" and then running away.
With the duty announcer's voice, usually going,
criminality.
There we go. Yep. But yeah, I was wondering if it was a real word. And so I looked it up in my huge ass Oxford dictionary that you could kill a person with if you were so inclined. And it is a word. And I was just horrified. I was like, who let this thing happen? Who let this word exist?
Hold on, I think Scorpion has to check this.
Oh, you had to go there.
Get over here!
But going back to End of Skyrim DLC, what could Bethesda be working on next? Well, other than obviously the Elder Scrolls Online, I want to say Fallout at the same time, though Skyrim, Elder Scrolls 6, torn between two worlds of extensive playtime.
Can I just say that? I mean, I know a lot of people complain about Hollywood, like doing sequels and whatnot. Where's the original IPs from these kind of developers?
To be honest, though, the kind of lore that they built up with, certainly with the Elder Scrolls series, is such that they haven't explored everything yet. I mean,
No. We
don't know what happened to the dwarves, which is a huge, big-ass thing in the Elder Scrolls games.
Right, okay.
Because I started playing them with Morrowind, and there's lots of dwarven ruins and sort of bits of text here and there in conversations where it is pretty much revealed that once upon a time, there were dwarves in the same world as humans and elves and stuff. And then something probably quite horrific happened and they all disappeared at the same time.
A giant bird come along and took their den and then the dwarves was got... Oh, no, wait, that's a hobbit.
Yeah. If it was going to be another Elder Scrolls, do you know what? I'd finally like to find out what happened with the bloody dwarves. I want to know what happened with the dwarves. That's what I want out of the next proper full Elder Scrolls game that is offline and not an MMO. I that's what I want to know.
Have you got something against MMOs, or is it just?
I have something against MMOs in terms of I don't have the time to invest in an online presence where I'm required to be there like at least once every couple of days, because I have enough time having huge gaps between playing frigging console games about online ones being complicated by when I'm online. You know. Anyway, moving on, because we better do that or else all we're going to talk about is Skyrim and Fallout. And
let's move on.
Fox has managed to piss off yet another fan community, or at least their lawyers and whatnot have, this time by banning the sale of Jane hats, aka the hats that the character Jane wore in the television series otherwise known as Firefly.
To be honest, I don't see how they could ban it. I mean, unless they actually patented somehow a Jane hat.
You see, this is the thing, that the Jane hat design, as many people have argued over the interwebs since this was announced last week, the design is not patented. It's actually based of an old, I believe, a Peruvian design that the natives tend to put together. You know, it's nothing super special. It's about as special as a sou'wester in terms of design.
I mean, it's kind of why Last Exit to Nowhere, when they do T-shirts, they do it of like stuff that isn't, you know, copyrighted. You know, there's no kind of images of the actors on there. There's no even like the title of the thing that's on there. Say, for example, right now I'm wearing a Winchester Tavern T-shirt from Shaun of the Dead. It doesn't say Shaun of the Dead on it. It doesn't have Simon Pegg's face on it. It doesn't even have zombie blood on it. Just and it looks fantastic.
I think part of the issue, I mean, they weren't happy with the fact that people were selling the hats to other fans, like people who could, were capable of knitting these hats were selling them, which clearly they weren't happy with because, oh, they're not getting money. And I believe there is somebody may have a licensing deal to produce things like these hats, which then, of course, means that they're trying to protect the rights for that. At the same time, though, it's a bit, it's like you, for years you've done nothing with this. In fact, you have pretty much abused the IP, dear Fox, and now suddenly
the rights should revert back to Joss Whedon.
And suddenly you swoop in on the fan community, go, no, slap, 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 you shall not sell these hats on Etsy and the like, slap, 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 or their lawyers do certainly. And it's just, it just reminds me a lot of the banning of screenings of Once More With Feeling, the Buffy episode, I believe one cinema over in the States used to do either weekly or monthly screenings of that episode where everyone would come along all dressed up and watch the episode sing along in a cinema.
Yeah, a bit like Rocky Horror Picture Show. You kind of dress up, you go to see the film, and, you know, you sing along to it.
So, yeah, but And Fox got angsty about that, and that got banned, the whole thing with the Buffy episode. And I kind of understand it. But it's at the same time, it's the fact that it's like, okay, so are these Jane hats that one of their license holders could make, are they ever going to be made? In which case, then, you're still going to it's just going to move the whole thing off of Etsy, and it'll be just people kind of hinting by using like words and phrases. Psst, from
hey,
Firefly.
Do you want a Jane hat?
Or, well, like, there's, you know, because he's got nicknames and stuff in series, I can't remember any of them at the moment, but like, you just have people just going, oh yeah, I can make a such and such a hat, with like a PayPal button beside it, so that you request the hat, hand over your details, they'll knit it up, or they've already got a huge stockpile of them already. Or some people have apparently been altering their designs to get around this, but then at the same time, there might have been people cracking up. But none of the hats are a Jane hat, because the hat his character wears in the series was made by his mum. It wasn't even made by somebody in the props or costume department.
Wow.
So that makes it just an extra bit level of ridiculous, the whole enforcement, because it's like, what, are you going to now go and after the actors? You know, she could go and make another hat anytime, you don't know. And then she's probably
the source of these hats.
Yeah, it could be. But at the same time, she's stealing with the original inhabitants of Peru. So
to be honest, I can't imagine like Nintendo doing this if like fake mustaches, like Mario style mustaches. Nintendo would be like, hey, yeah, we've got, you know, people interested, you know, in our stuff. Yeah, that's great, you know, we've got people excited. Fox, hey, yeah, fan base, by the way, we love your enthusiasm, but no, not unless you paid us.
And then they just don't go and bring out new issues of series and the such like. Anyway, so further screwing everyone over.
I mean, Fox's rap sheet for, you know,
treating fan communities well.
Yeah.
It's fan abuse.
Fan abuse.
It's fan abuse.
It's fabuse.
Okay, I'm going to move this on before I get even more angry. To something which people were initially uberly outraged over. And then it was explained a little bit more, and then people were like, oh, actually, we're not that outraged over it in the end. Basically, Apple got it in the neck earlier last week. Apple got it in the neck, all because of Saga issue 12, a comic from a comic series called Saga, amazingly, not being available via comics apps on its app store. Now, at first, everyone was making, it's Apple. Yeah, Apple's pulled the comic, whatnot, because it does contain some brief moments of homosexual sex.
Yay.
Yeah. You know, and they've had loads of sex and violence in general throughout the series. So, you know, it's all in the best possible taste imaginable, you know. Equal taste for all. And you could perhaps think that Apple had pulled it, but it wasn't. It gets a bit strange because actually, Comixology, one of the main suppliers of comics reading apps in the world, were actually the ones that said, no, we're not putting Saga issue 12 up for download via iOS. That it was Comixology that made the decision, not Apple. This news took a while though to filter through the community. And it was basically based on their interpretations of Apple's marketplace rules for iOS.
I mean, this reminds me a lot like Disney's attitude with the Avengers Assemble, with the whole BBFC kind of cutting of Spike coming through Coulson and, what is it, the director's commentaries and stuff.
Well, it wasn't the I mean, the director's commentaries, they just didn't add them because they were lazy, as far as I can tell. But the whole, which we discussed way back on this podcast,
way back.
The whole not having the spear tip going through Coulson's chest, it did it in the cinema over here, where it had a 12 BBFC rating. But when you want to release a DVD version of a film, you have to resubmit it for BBFC approval because you might have extras and blah, 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 that. And basically, before it even went through the BBFC reviewing process, Disney cut the spear. They digitally removed the spear.
Yeah,
the
digitally
spear.
Removed rather than cut.
Because, yeah, it still happens, but you're like wondering, well, where's all this damage?
I mean, it doesn't affect the movie too much, but by the same token, it's annoying that they turn around and said, oh no, the British are too sensitive. We can't have the Spike coming through.
I want to roll this back though to the issue of Saga, the Saga of Saga, and why it wasn't, and the Comixology basically preempting Apple's marketplace rules. This is because there have been lots of apps and bits of content over the years since the iOS marketplace was launched, or the Apple marketplace was launched, that have been banned for, in terms of the content, either the graphic nature of the content or any even political messages the content might have. And so the idea that gay sex could be a step too far, however brief it is kind of understandable from Comixology's point of view. I mean, they were being overzealous at the same time. It was like, well, you had graphic depictions of straight sex previously in this series. And then it's just the kind of the message it sends about the acceptance of gay sex in a work of fiction.
You see, they're probably not concerned about the message that it sends. They're more concerned about the fact that they realise that they can get away with heterosexual sex. But gay sex, I mean, even in, say, for example, schools, you know, they have this thing where they're basically told that you can't promote homosexuality.
Mm.
As if, you know, like, advertising it. It's like, well, to be honest, how would that happen realistically? Because a lot of people are really oversensitive about, well, especially homophobic people, are really sensitive over, you know, the concept of shoving it down their throat type thing. It's like, even like talking about it in even a minutely positive manner is kind of deemed as, you know, advertising it.
Which is pretty bad. What perhaps makes the situation with Saga even worse is the fact that the comic series has always been advertised as a comic series for mature readers. It's not a teen market audience. It's a 16, 17 or over audience that has been expected to read the series. Obviously, young kids probably have ended up reading it. At the same time, though, if anyone under the age of 16 reads something like this, it's the fault of the parents. There, yeah. it's their fault. So it's like anyone else who's old enough to read it and understand it or whatever, basically interact with it without somehow being made evil, apparently, well, you know, it should have been up to them whether or not they go near it. But then it's just what annoys me is just the fact that straight sex has previously been fine in the series, and these brief, that a couple of panels, it's not a whole page full-on thing, it's a couple of panels. Because of that, Comixology were like, oh dear, maybe we shouldn't put this up on iOS. But Comixology have since said, apologised, and said that they were being too overly cautious, you know, about the whole thing, and the comic should be by now reinstated or well, even brought into the iOS.
I mean, what I want to know is, say for example, you you know, try and stick something on, like, say for example, something like iOS.
Yeah.
And if it gets basically not approved, does it cost you to? Well, obviously, it's going to cost you for more work to kind of adjust it somehow.
Yeah.
But would would it cost you more to resubmit it?
I don't think, no, it doesn't. I don't believe it costs you money to resubmit.
Then really, they're not really losing too much by, you know,
basically
going out there first and saying we want this on, rather than like saying we can't have this on. Do you know what I mean?
Like, Comixology just didn't do themselves any favours over the whole thing, because there was a huge hype process before their apology and the instatement of the comic, which basically was pointing the finger at Apple the entire time.
Yeah. And it's pretty damn... well, it's kind of cheeky in a way. I mean, sort of like saying, oh, you know, we haven't done something because, oh, those people won't accept it over there. Is like, well, that's not really a good enough excuse.
And this is without even asking them whether or not it's okay or not. It's just frustrating and annoying, and I just want to... The comic's available now, which is fine. I mean, when it originally happened, the creators, though, for Saga were like, oh, you know... if you can't, you know, because you can't get it through digital, these are all the ways you can get it. And they were like, oh, just get your local comic book store. When that kind of thing is suggested, that kind of annoys me, because it's a bit out of my way to go to my local comic book store. It's more than 20 miles away, and I don't drive, and it doesn't have the best of public transport links. In fact, it would probably take a little bit too long for the sake of a comic to go and get it.
I mean, my question with this specific issue is it a case of any publicity is good publicity? You know, is the fact that obviously this has been out on the web now, you know, how many people have heard of Saga?
Yeah.
Now that it's actually drawing people to go, this issue was, you know, kind of banned, but then it's come back, ooh, kind of thing.
It probably has done them some good, and it does make me wonder whether or not the creators have seen a boomf in
sales. Yeah, and it's kind of worrying that, you know, other developers or, you know, other kind of content creators may actually try this tactic again, you know, to basically do...
But I would definitely say that it wasn't something they did on purpose, if you consider the fact that because it's issue number 12, that means it would have been near, if not probably, the concluding part of an arc. I don't know, because I haven't been following the comics themselves.
But I mean, it's also interesting that it's targeted at iOS, so presumably Android tablets, you know, will be fine with downloading it.
Yeah, the Android was fine. It wasn't affected at all because the marketplace is a lot freer, which of course means we have to deal with the malware issue. But hey, it's okay, because I think, like, Google killed something like 60,000 malware-filled apps on the App Store the other week.
But, I mean, the interesting thing is that, if I remember rightly, I have heard reports about stuff like Pokemon emulators on iOS and stuff.
Is it on iOS?
I think I've heard of, you know,
the
like
only
that
on iOS. I still remember the one time the other year when an emulator of, or a ROM of, or whatever, of Pokemon Yellow somehow managed to get, because stuff has to be approved to go on the Apple App Store, somehow managed to make it on there for a while, and apparently made it to, like, the number one slot, which proved two things. One, that people will download stuff that is unofficial if it's an emulator of a well-loved game, and two, that Nintendo's content strategy at the moment is probably killing them.
Why'd you say that?
Pokemon Yellow is one of the most popular old-school Pokemon games.
Yeah.
It made it to the top of the iOS charts before it got taken down in, like, less than a couple of hours, which means if it had been a proper, fully paid-up app, it would have been bought... It would have been the hottest thing since... I don't know, something really friggin' hot. It would have done them an amazing amount of good in terms of sales, and... But the issue of Nintendo's hardware strategy and software strategy are a matter for another podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you can't exactly blame them, you know, because even though they're not directly competing, you know, iOS can be considered a gaming platform. You know, all mobile phones can nowadays. Well
smartphones.
Obviously, yeah. Smartphones, but... And in the end, you don't want your product going on a competitor's...
I think that... I wouldn't necessarily call it competitor. I think the main issue of putting anything that you properly own the IP for and is something that's going to sell well is that 30% of the profit's going to be going to Apple.
Yeah, so their success is going to be just bumping Apple all the more.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our next...
Indeed, yeah, we shall.
...bit of news for the week? So, you may have heard that... Batman Arkham Origins got announced last week.
Woohoo!
Sweet. You don't want to know how many hours I've spent between Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. It's a lot. Including the Wii U version of Arkham City. Though not as much as Paul.
Yeah,
had, which
I really dug that version.
But the army, I played to death the Xbox 360 version. But basically, this is looking to be a prequel to the previous two games. Not necessarily a origin story for Batman per se, but certainly looking at his earlier days, focusing on the Black Mask. And apparently it's set during one Christmas Eve in Gotham. So we get the whole of Gotham, not just the east side, which is where Arkham City was set up.
East side represent!
Set Christmas Eve. It's got a bit of a Batman Returns feel to it, but without the bloody Tim Burton painting all over it.
If you haven't guessed, we don't particularly like the Tim Burton Batman or Batman films. Well,
not really, no. And Joel Schumacher certainly didn't do much of a better job either. It's just, yeah, so WB Montreal is developing this rather than Rocksteady, because Rocksteady are still working on some other Batman game by the looks of things. It's not a Batman sort of Arkham one. Of course, another thing to keep in mind is that Paul Dini, who wrote the previous two games, is not writing this one. It's not Rocksteady, so it's like it's awesome news and yet troubling at the same time, because the creative forces behind the previous two games are not the people working on this one.
Now, I think I've heard something about something called Batman Arkham Origins Blackgate. Is that kind of...
I think it's...
side thing?
It's... I think it's a tie-in. It's a more of a 2D game.
Okay.
Which probably shows the prelude to... It's probably going to be the... I think it might be the prelude to the events of Arkham Origins. I
mean, to the prequel.
Yeah, yeah. Also, one more thing, but they've done sort of tie-in comics and stuff with like, previous games and things. So, but certainly the whole idea, because Blackgate is... I mean, because... How do I put this? In Arkham Asylum, Blackgate is closed after crap happened there and it became unusable to contain inmates. And Blackgate was the regular prison... not for the mentally insane. And so that's why there's whole references in Arkham Asylum to the fact that you've got loads of Blackgate prisoners in Arkham Asylum, because they needed to find somewhere temporary to house them. And then that's why Arkham City happens, because after Arkham Asylum gets fucked up by the Joker and co, they then that's how what's his name, the main bad guy for Arkham City, is able to Hugo Strange.
That's the one. Yeah.
Is able to sweep him with his idea, which is to basically, you know, corner off the east side of Arkham of Gotham City to turn it into a new place to house not just the criminally insane, but the regular muggers and rapists as well.
Because that's a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah. And so you that's how that happens. So if the whole Blackgate thing is going to show what happened prior to Arkham Asylum, okay. At the same time, though, the bit with Arkham Origins sounds more like it's going much further back, and it's showing how Batman ends up working with particular characters. Now, I'm kind of hoping that Catwoman is going to be involved again. This is because most of my experiences of the character of Black Mask have been through Catwoman comics. Because I believe, as far as I can tell, he's like one of her main nemeses.
Nemeses.
Yes. If, you know, it's not somebody else. And it's obviously it's going to be the whole of Gotham City.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve.
I mean, it's... I really am worried that it's not by the, you know, original developers, because we've seen how games kind of turn out when you kind of change the developers and, you know, they have their take on it and it's completely different. And
Fallout New Vegas!
Yeah. Not that I played either Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas, but yeah.
You've just heard me moan and whinge about the differences far too much.
Yeah. But, I mean, obviously it's going to be the same publisher and whatnot, so they're going to want to, you know, work on the strengths of the previous two games. So it's not like they're going to come out left field and be like, oh yeah, by the way, we've teamed up with Nintendo and sticking in Fox or Samus and all that, you know, random kind of stuff that happens. Like, say, for example, with when Nintendo gave the character to of Fox to Rare, and they come up with Star Fox Adventures, or where they gave it to Namco and come up with Star Fox Assault, or gave Samus to Ninja Theory. Was it Ninja Theory? That came up with Other M.
Do you know what I'm hoping with the game, other than obviously like Catwoman being introduced, and the fact that it's taken the whole of Gotham City and it's in Batman's early days, well, does that mean that we'll actually get to witness more of the regular crime families?
That would be interesting.
Like the Falcones and stuff. Because they're a huge part of the earlier years of Batman, at least if you're looking at, you know, post-Silver Age comics.
You know, it'd be also good. Is actually dealing with the police force a bit more, because I mean you didn't really get to do that
because the city's going to be, it's not going to be under lockdown, it's going to be a case of, it looks like, you know, something's happening, obviously people like Batman have been made aware of this, so it'd be nice to see a bit more Jim Gordon.
Ooh, could you imagine, you basically, because the streets will be, you know, obviously kind of icy and whatnot because it's Christmas Eve, but you might actually be able to drive the Batmobile down the streets of Gotham. That would be quite cool.
That would be really cool. That'd be quite awesome. At the same time, though, it depends what kind of Batmobile it is, because the thing about the classic Batmobile, like the non-Nolan film ones, is the fact that it's like, okay, so it's narrower than the Nolan film sort of tank thing.
Yeah.
But they're really low and long.
Obviously, there's no speed bumps in Gotham City.
There are no sort of speed or traffic calming measures in the city that are of a physical nature rather than electronic. It's like, it's far easier to hack a traffic light system than it is to blast a speed hump out of the way.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
Yeah, yeah. So,
especially with Batman's gizmos.
Oh no, I'm just thinking of him just kind of like circling in the Batmobile, which would be impossible because of its length, just around the speed hump, and he's sort of leaning out of the door and just spraying some of his explosive gel on because he's kind of running a bit short, but he can't get out of the car for some crazy reason, and just and then just driving away and just kind of clicking the thing and it blowing up behind him, and then him circling back to go past the now crumbling speed hump. I clearly need sleep.
Clearly. Yes, you do.
I got excited by the idea of virtual presence robots earlier. That's.
Oh no, that sounds pretty cool to me. But virtual presence robots.
Okay, Batman Arkham Origins. Yeah. Excited, but cautious.
Cautious, definitely. And glad that it's coming to Wii U as well.
Yes.
The Wii U needs more games.
And just in case you're wondering, and you haven't heard us say before, Arkham City worked quite well on Wii U. It certainly made it feel more like you were Batman, because you got to touch stuff with your hands and it felt like you were interacting and all that kind of crazy stuff, which games are meant to be able to do.
Not to mention, obviously, the couple of main points. Obviously, you can actually play completely off the TV, so, you know, just have it on your tablet, the tablet controller. And also, the fact that it's a map that, you know, is real time. I think that's actually very useful, to be honest.
Oh, I just want to, because I don't think I made it clear enough, but I sort of said the setting, but the storyline seems to be that not only is it Christmas Eve and all that, but that this group of assassins has
come to
Gotham City. So one assumes that Black Mask could have hired them in order to deal, because Black Mask is meant to be the main antagonist.
Yeah.
But then it's like, well, why would you have a bunch of assassins, you know, come into Gotham City? And it's like, well, if I was a antagonist like Black Mask, who is he's like Penguin, because he deals with organized crime, you know, he's mafioso without being mafioso, really, because he's kind of gone a bit kind of costumed because of the whole mask thing. Though it does also make me wonder what kind of mask Black Mask it's going to be, because there's the Black Mask that's got, like, you know, like a piece of material over his face, and then there's the Black Mask who's horrendously deformed.
I have to say, kind of thinking of, like, Batman in general, Batman is just really suited to video games. I'm not entirely sure whether you've noticed, but just the amount of different, for a start, different, like, main bosses, but also the fact that you have to kind of get through their henchmen as well. Mm. Each boss seems to have, you know, F-load of henchmen.
Yes, they really do. It's like, you'd think they would have learned eventually that there's no point in signing up. In reality, Batman's villains would eventually run out of henchmen because they'd realise there is no point in signing up, because Batman will get them.
See, if the Joker's really that good, what he'd do is basically convince all of his henchmen to go and pretend to be Batman's henchmen. That way, Batman will look like a bad guy and they'll lock him up.
For all we know, there could have been a storyline like that in one of the much older comics already.
True.
And they kind of, they not intentionally did that in the second Batman film. Wow, Nolan Batman, Dark Knight, Rise, no, the Dark Knight, sorry.
Mm.
Because of the guys that start trying to be copycat Batman vigilantes.
Yeah.
Which start giving him a bad name.
And weren't they, because wasn't the main guy that was kind of conducting the deals, wasn't that the same guy, Cillian Murphy, that actually played the Scarecrow?
Mm.
So, yeah.
It also makes me wonder who else is going to appear, because obviously you mentioned Scarecrow, and he is one of the earlier film villains, so it does make me wonder if Scarecrow, because, I mean, they're saying Black Mask is the main antagonist, but, like, you know, Hugo Strange and Joker were, like, the main antagonists in
they orchestrated game. It was their plan to create the Bedlam.
Yeah.
Type thing.
So it does make me wonder what if Black Mask is leading the cause. I mean, because we still don't know enough about, at least in the Arkham universe of things, how things developed with Poison Ivy, with Penguin, with Catwoman as a good guy or bad guy. She might not be so much of a good guy in this one because it's an earlier point in Batman's history. Also makes me wonder if characters like any of the Robins or Nightwing might show up again, because it depends how far back the story goes. But I mean, they say Arkham Origins, but I haven't seen anything that makes it specifically clear yet how
it relates to Arkham itself.
Well, not Arkham itself, but how far back it is from Arkham Asylum, because like you said, there's Blackgate. And it's like, well, if Blackgate's being made as a tie-in to Origins, then technically it might tie into Asylum, due to the fact that what I said, you know, happened was the fact that, you know, Blackgate got fucked up bad. And that meant that those inmates went to Arkham Asylum, thus causing a whole load of Arkham Asylum to happen. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, also, the Al Ghul family, obviously, they're assassins.
Yeah, so yeah, maybe there's one of their
quite a few assassins.
Maybe one of their reps is involved as well. You know, maybe maybe we'll see Al Ghul again and sort of get creep up into view. So just so you guys know, I've completed BioShock Infinite for a second time. I'm not sure if I said last week whether or not I'd actually completed it, but just so you know, I've completed it for a second time. I will have thoughts about this going up on my new blog in the near future.
The taste. The aftertaste.
There's mixed feelings about the whole thing. Also, what did we think of this week's Doctor Who?
Oh, well, that's always that's always one to talk about. Doctor Who. Let's see. Oh, in the sub.
Was it the episode called Cold War? Yeah. And I was, which just made me cringe so much because they went with the obvious title.
I mean, I think where most series actually go are good, and not necessarily Doctor Who, but most other series, is that they generally tend to have bigger pieces that kind of you know, crescendo into a big finish at the end of the season. And it seems to me like Moffat's been trying to do that, but there's just like these two or three episodes in between which are just one-off stories that are monster of the week, and I'm not entirely sure whether it kind of meshes. I'm kind of waiting for the next Moffat story to, you know,
to continue the arc that's going on.
Exactly. I mean, who is Clara? Why is she? You know, my theory is that, you know, basically she gets cloned a number of times.
My theory is that she's actually some kind of universal constant. That there will always be a Clara.
That's the kind of thing that Moffat would write, actually.
Yeah, that's my theory, so...
That, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
I think my one was the easy way out.
Yeah. You'll find out that she's kind of some kind of weird paradox that we can't actually live without, and that's because she's some kind of paradoxical constant, thus being a paradox and a constant at the same time, just to fudge everyone up in their understanding of anything to do with time and space.
I mean, obviously, because with the Christmas special and, well, the episode before it, Asylum of the Daleks, it almost seemed as though Oswald had never met the Doctor. So, is she the same Oswald?
I would say, and when I say universal
is
constant...
Is it Oswald or Oswin? Or...
When I say
same character.
When I say universal constant, I mean somebody that for each generation will exist.
Yeah.
They are not necessarily the same
person
but
they're...
I mean, it's the reason I'm leaning towards this more is the fact that the Doctor went into a extremely in-depth description during the episode the previous week. The one with when they were in space.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With the temple and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Went into this really in-depth description of how we all come from stars and that it's amazing that everything's able to come together and...
Okay.
All that.
Yeah.
To the little girl. And it was just kind of like... I was like, what? Why? You didn't necessarily need to go into that description. It felt a bit expositiony. What, like, expositiony about how maybe... Clara could be some kind of weird constant that keeps being combined.
I don't know, I was kind of... It could be that, or it could literally just be the case of, you know, this group of people had their religious, you know, things, and it's just been broken, and so the Doctor's actually kind of coming in with the truth of things.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, is she a clone, or is she some kind of weird sort of... thing of space, time and matter kind of doing crazy stuff together.
Mm.
We won't know, obviously, until the season finale. Yeah.
I mean, obviously they seem like, you know, different things. Which, if she was a constant, that would make killing her off awfully difficult.
But only if she has the knowledge of her former selves.
Well, no, because if you think about it, right, the Doctor gets into some, you know, awkward situation where Clara dies.
Again.
What happens? Oh, he just goes to the next generation. Picks her up all over again.
Mm.
Okay, so she has to, you know, teach her stuff, you know, a bit like John Connor has to do with, you know, the Terminators. You know, having to reteach him, you know, all of the whole hasta la vista, baby type stuff.
Yeah. I think I'm going to move us on to our last little bit of discussion for this week, because we're going to be a bit shorter than usual, because we are.
A bit shorter than usual?
Yeah. There's less pools. It's crazy. But anyway, just wanted to briefly talk about the decision by the Office of Fair Trading to investigate free-to-play games and their effects on parents and their children.
I mostly their wallets.
Yeah.
I don't care about the kids actually playing these games so often. It's just the fact that it costs so much.
So that I think the consultation for that, so basically like the public being able to put in their views on the whole thing, is probably running for the next couple of months. And I think the report itself is meant to be coming out in September this year. And basically they're looking to fact that, I mean, you've probably seen headlines about this in the news, but like kids playing like games on their parents' iPad or something, especially the iPad. And, you know, the parents not realising that this game that was originally free to download, such as the free-to-play model, does have paid bits to progress the game along, basically. And either they haven't obviously said that, enabled it on their iPad, that every time you buy something from an in-app purchase or whatever, or on the store, that you need to put in the password, or they've, for the sort of, you know, Apple account, or they've given the kid the password, and yeah, it's not a fabulous situation. But at the same time, the way they were sort of marking out the investigation to be last week when it was announced, was that they were going to perhaps hint towards the psychological nature that makes it compelling for children to actually go after these in-app purchases in the first place. Like the way, like they're going to look at a bit like the way the games are designed to make people want to do this.
Yeah, that's a bit of a, because I mean, all games are specifically designed to make you want to carry on playing them.
Yeah, but then it's a make you carry on playing them and pay for stuff. I mean, basically, the outcome of the investigation could lead to either various bits of existing law being upheld, nothing being done because it's not actually found to be a real problem, or new laws being created. And basically, if it's the upholding of existing laws and enforcement or the creation of new laws, then not only would people who make, I don't know, some kind of racing game where if you want to not wait for your car to refuel or something, you've got to pay like 50p and you'll be able to get on to the next race stage or whatever, it might make companies like that realize they can't do models like that anymore, because it's like, oh well, you either wait a horrendously long time or you pay and you get to it straight away. That is one of the numerous examples I've seen around of like free-to-play games.
Happened in a game.
That's actually happened. I've heard other people talking about it. And then you've got stuff like, obviously, like, well, what about microtransactions in general in games? Just and not in just something that you might play on an iPad, but stuff on Facebook. Not that Facebook Games is looking too healthy at the moment after EA have announced today that they're closing down three of their Facebook games, including The Sims Social.
Using the Catholic method.
Oh,
sorry.
Yes, very sorry. So you've got that. So you've got the Facebook games, which have also had this free-to-play model. You've got the sort of like with the whole microtransactions thing. And then obviously people like EA, that's where I was kind of going.
Yeah.
Had stuff like Dead Space 3 and the microtransactions. Mm. And okay, that's adults in theory. But it's, you know, it's the whole microtransactions thing, and it's kind of like, well, personally, I think basically they should probably try and get some psychologists in on this. So they're currently calling out for opinions and dialogue from parents who've been affected by the whole thing, you know. And I'm just like, well, surely you should probably talk to some psychologists about the I don't like saying addictive in games in the same sentence, but certainly the effects of reward and paying for things in order to get that reward, that sense of reward in a game, which, it could all get a bit hairy come September a segment of the industry.
Yeah. I mean, this type of stuff isn't happening in regular games. It's this small niche of them, and
but there's loads of them, because it's like, it's, I don't have figures in front of me for how big the spending can be on in-app purchases for games. But it does get to sort of crazy levels. So you've got this game which people have downloaded for free, and then in order to get all the cool stuff, they've got to pay for things. I mean, the closest I've got, because I've never downloaded a game like that, I briefly played around with the Walking Dead Facebook game. And it was just kind of a case of, oh, you know, I can do so much, but if I want to be able to do more, I will have to pay something that will result in actual money.
That they really don't think about the best way to monetize their game. I mean, if you take Team Fortress 2, right? Now, obviously, you've got a game that is completely free to play. What do you pay for? Well, you can pay for items which, you know, you could otherwise trade with other people to get, or wait for it to randomly drop, or try and build that weapon yourself. But some people still, you know, because they see, like, this cool item on a person, or they hear about this cool weapon that will enable you to do some sort of weird thing, and they want it straight away, and they buy it straight away, and that's absolutely fine.
But then the obviously the main contention there with the issue of Team Fortress 2 is the fact that you can play the game still. It's the fact that with the sort of some of the bats and the poorly implemented free to play models that some companies have been running is the fact that you can't even progress, or certainly not for a protracted period of time. Unless you pay up.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't imagine that with, I don't know, say for example, like Final Fantasy or even BioShock. Perhaps, in order to get to the next area, you have to pay a bit more. What? No. Just no.
Because it
end of the game there.
Yeah, because it goes beyond the simpler idea of something like regular sort of download content, which tends to add a lot more onto the game for your money, and you don't tend to need it in order to complete the main game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it just adds an extra bit on, as it were.
Exactly. Tack this bit on, which will give you, you know, I don't know, new items, new characters to play as, new areas and whatnot. And
Unfortunately, I don't think any parents who could be affected by their small child making in-app purchases on their iPad listen to this podcast. But if you do, or if you know anyone who's been starting to get their kid use to messing around on the iPad, just either A, if they haven't got the password set up for their blooming, you know, sort of the Apple account they've got, which is connected to their credit details, you put the password in and then don't let the kid have the bloody password, okay? And your wallet will be far more thankful for it. Far, far more thankful. It makes me worry about with my parents because they're probably going to get something like an iPad anytime soon.
Nah.
But my youngest brother does play a lot of free games, a lot of free flash games, certainly on the CBBC and CBeebies websites. And I was like, well, that's, you know, that's BBC, that's fine, it's not going to suddenly go paid anytime soon. But then I'm just thinking to myself, well, could it ever?
I mean, it wouldn't even be so bad if it was a case of those actually marketing these free-to-play games as demos, which you then pay for the full game afterwards. Or something like that. Because that kind of system works. You know, you play a game for a bit, you know, for free. Or if you like it, yeah, actually pay a bit more. But it's the fact that they're basically marketing these games as, this is a game. Go play it. Oh yeah, you like that? You like that? Yeah. Give me some money.
I think that there's another thing that is the fault of consumers in relation to all this. And it's the fact that developers have had to resort to this. In order to, because they found it difficult to actually sell games up front, even at cheap prices, and there is an issue with people not being willing to pay for content up front.
I think to a certain extent, it's also the concept of intention. Because I mean, a lot of the time, you get regular games coming out on consoles, and you know the developers actually want to make them. You can feel the love behind, you know, the game itself. Whereas a lot of these other companies that are just in it for the money, you know, they you know, hire on, you know, a couple of people here and there, bam, get it done, get it out there, make as much money as possible. And that's where it's kind of backfiring, in my opinion, anyway.
But you know, what we're saying means absolutely nothing because the OFT don't want to listen to us. They only want to talk to parents.
They don't want to listen to Nerds Assemble.
They don't want to listen to Nerds Assemble. They don't want to listen to anyone who's perhaps got a bigger eye on the whole thing. Unless, of course, they do end up talking to... I know, because you've got a lot of indie devs that are certainly looking at free-to-play models, not just like the big guys. And it does make me wonder if it could threaten the indie ecosystem for those who aren't just trying to just say, oh, look, we've made a game, but, oh, look, we've made a game, and try to make some money from it.
I mean, the interesting thing is that, you know, this is basically a symptom that's replicated in other media as well. You know, you're getting films which are struggling to get funding and whatnot because of these kind of, you know, problems. And it's just making me wonder whether we're actually becoming almost post-capitalistic where we can't actually go out, make a film, earn money off it in the conventional sense. We have to, you know, do all these things where we have to figure out, you know, whether people want it for... I don't know, it's getting too political now.
And meanwhile, I saw a headline earlier suggesting that somebody's going to be trying out introducing ebook subscriptions in the near future.
Now, I can imagine magazine subscriptions for, but, like, ebooks, but...
ebook.
So, say, for example... ebook subscription to Penguin or something.
No, I didn't see how in depth it was, but I had a sinking feeling that it was more to do with getting stages of content on a subscription basis, which would also, if that were the case, mean that you'd only have access to the content for as long as you had the subscription. Which wouldn't be so fab. But anyway, I think that is all we've got time for.
Well, it's probably not, but it's probably all you're willing to talk about.
It's all we're willing to put together for you guys and subject you to. So hopefully we will be...
If you want a longer episode, you're going to have to, you know, go onto the channel and say, we want Paul. We want Paul. Oh, don't worry, I'll know which one you meant.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, this is definitely all we've got time for without repeating ourselves far, far too much. Hopefully we'll be back to normal next week. So yes.
Well,
so,
as
normal as we normally are. There's not much normal to begin with.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going.
Yeah. Okay. So
you got there first.
It's good night from.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also check out my new website, drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. It's a mixture of creative processes and review stuff, basically. You can find Nerds Assemble, however, on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. You can also find us on the website www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes, and you can find us on Facebook and Google Plus under Nerds Assemble Podcast. That is it. Good night.
Good night.